Hello, folks. How y'all doing? This is the Brain Pimp with another episode of First Hit for Free. Normally, I go ahead and mention to you how you could be getting this vocal talent at a discount rate and how this is a great way for you to go ahead and become part of a new empire in the birthing. But hey, we got a lot of source material I want to get through, so I want you to go ahead and get all of that. The first one is a Beatnik special about the disaffected men of the 1950s, which might bring us to something about the disaffected men in the 21st century. It's called Like Man, Somebody Dig Me.
The master of mystery and adventure, William N. Robeson.
They call themselves the Beat Generation, by which they do not mean defeated. They mean beatific, which is to say, blissful. They're cool, man. They're way out there. They dig jazz, which has no melody, and poetry, which makes no sense, at least to the rest of us squares. They're kids seeking an answer, and to the Beat Generation, the answer seems to be found in inaction, in non-feeling. They couldn't care less. But face a beat cat with reality, face him with murder, and what happens? Listen then, as Dennis Day stars in Like Man, Somebody Dig Me, which follows in just a moment.
Like Man, Somebody Dig Me, starring Mr. Dennis Day, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Man, like crazy. Man, I dig everything. I dig Zen and underarm deodorant. I dig Elvis Presley and Sputniks. I even dig people that drive right on by when I'm hitchhiking. People call me the tennis shoe, because I wear them and because I'm always on the move. But mostly because I'm cool, man. I could stand out here in the middle of this desert all day. And you know something? It wouldn't bother me.
You want a lift?
Hey, I'm with you, chick.
How far are you going?
I just stick with Route 66, man, onto the ocean.
We're on our way to Las Vegas.
You going to California?
Like I wrote a poem, man. I want to read it to the Pacific Ocean.
The Pacific Ocean?
Well, I already read it to the Atlantic.
Well, if you read it to the Atlantic, why bother to read it to the Pacific?
Man, have you ever read a poem to the Atlantic in January?
Well, no, I...
Oh, man.
We almost didn't stop for you.
You know, most people won't take a chance on hitchhikers these days.
Yeah, you're lucky we picked you up.
And look, man, I don't know what you want, but I ain't got it. I got no rose to pin on you, no medals. Dig? I just stand by the road with my thumb up. If you want to pick me up, cool. If you want to drive on by, too cool. If you want to stop the car and let me out, that's okay with me. Because, man, I'm cool. I just don't care. You're the driver and I'm just along for the ride. You dig?
I'm just making conversation.
Uh-huh. If you're going to Vegas, man, you'll have to turn off at Kingman. I don't dig Vegas. Vegas is for squares. Right now, I'm going to get some shut-eye. Oh, I'm tired, man. The cops run me out of town last night for building a fire to keep warm. Well, I'm tired, man.
You mean just for building a fire?
Like, how was I to know all that wood was somebody's house? Pull down the lids of my eyes and make like I was asleep. But it was all I could do to keep from busting out laughing. It was kicks, man. These squares were real kicks.
Walter, turn on the radio.
Okay.
Walter, I don't like that man.
Oh, Mary, don't be...
Your voice down. You want to wake him up? I think he's crazy and I think he's dangerous.
Honey, he's perfectly harmless. I see his type on the road a lot lately. kind of a fad. They call themselves the Beat Generation. They pretend that nothing matters to them anymore. They just thrift. He's harmless.
Well, just the same, I wish we hadn't...
We interrupt Matinee Melodies to bring you another bulletin on the killer who's been terrorizing southern Nevada.
Walter, listen.
The hatchet maniac's fourth victim was just found brutally murdered in the small Nevada town of Searchlight, not far from the Arizona border. Only one eyewitness has seen the killer. She describes him as being medium height, dark coloring, wearing a red nylon jacket and tennis shoes.
Walter,
use your head.
Turn it
out. You're in Arizona.
But the description fits. And he could be carrying anything in that bag of his.
You want to look in a bag like?
I thought you were asleep.
Don't jump. Stay cool. I'll put it in the front seat and you can look see. Man, it don't even zip a shut. So what do you dig inside? A bottle of wine from the supermarket? Typewritten copies of my poems? A clean shirt with a dirty collar? Man, I travel so light I don't even dig toothbrushes. So what am I going to do with a hatchet? Man, there's one thing about squares. They never, ever learn.
Mr. Kingman, buddy, where do you want to get out?
Anywhere.
We've got to get some gas, too.
That's strange. The streets are almost deserted.
With that maniac running loose, everybody's probably locked up indoors.
Daughter, shouldn't we have turned off by now? We're just about out of town.
Yeah.
Oh, wait a minute. Here's the place. See? Props, food, and gas. Look, why don't we pull in here and ask and get some gas at the same time?
I don't see anybody.
Like, maybe they're closed.
Lights are still on. I'll go inside.
Leave me, Walter.
There's nothing to be afraid of, man.
Well, I'm certainly not going to stay out here alone.
Why, thanks, Jake.
Walter!
Like, who was I to stay in the car when the body's inside? Just as we go through the front door, some cat hustles in from the kitchen, wiping his hands on his apron.
Oh, there you are. I didn't hear you drive out.
Walter, you've got blood on your hands.
Mary, please don't be lying. Tomorrow's special's chicken and dumplings. Somebody has to kill the chickens. That's why I didn't hear you drive up.
Oh.
We need some gas.
Yeah, man. Like gasoline?
Man, like right away, I got eyes to see this cat ain't nobody's pop. And he ain't never run no gas station before. What do you think? I'm going to tell these squares? I drop my bag at the end of the counter, and then I walk around to the back of the station and scrub some of the dirt off my face. It takes me quite a while to scrub, but I come back around the station just in time to see the two squares drive off down the road. And what do you think happens? Instead of turning right to go to Vegas, they turn to the left. And when I come in the cafe, I surprise this cat behind the counter.
Hey, man, you walk up on people like too quiet.
That's why they call me the tennis shoe.
Look, you're hip. They call me the cat.
I can tell why. Hey, where'd those two squares go?
Mexico.
Mexico? They said they were going to Vegas.
Yeah, I know. They asked me where to turn, and I told them. They drive long enough, they'll wind up in Mexico.
Man, you are too cool. I leave the cat and I'm walking west on 66 with my thumb ready. 10, maybe 15 minutes at the most. When the squad car with the flashing lights screams up to a stop. Oh, right away they pull out those big, shiny pistols. And right away, I know what they're thinking. This is really gonna be crazy.
Hold your hands in the air.
Man, like, go away.
Hold them up high if you don't want your head blown off. That's better. I'm gonna search him, George.
Hey, easy, man. I laugh when people do that.
He's clean. What you got in the bag?
I got goodies for Grandma. You dig, Grandma?
Step away from it. See what's in the bag, George.
Okay.
My God. What is it? We've got him.
Well, I got who, man?
This is the hatchet killer, Charlie.
Over to dig what's in the bag, and I almost flip. There, on top of the clean shirt with the dirty collar, on top of all that cool poetry, on top of an almost full half bottle of wine, there's this hatchet I've never seen before. man, like I'd laugh. But the hatchet is all bloody.
Your name and give it to us fast.
I told you, man. I'm the tennis shoe.
I don't like your flip attitude.
So flip, man, flip.
I don't know whether you realize it or not, but you're in bad trouble. You've been caught with a murder weapon and no identification and no alibi.
I told you my story, but you don't dig it.
You expect me to believe that you've just been passing through this state?
Don't forget that Bronson cat in Gallup, New Mexico. He's all the alibi I need. I was swinging at a party at his place last night. All night. He digs me, so I'm not shook. This is a new kick, Daddy-O. I ain't never been up for murder before. Oh, too cool. Skitty up a little bit.
Kingman Sheriff's Office. Yeah, he's here. It's the Gallup Police.
Hello. Hey, I got him there with you? Put him on. Will you shut up so I can hear? Hello? Mr. Bronson, this is the Kingman Sheriff's Office. I got a man here that says you know him. Was at a party at your place last night. Calls himself the Tennis Shoe. What? Just a minute. Says he never heard of you.
Hey, let me talk to him. Hello, man.
Yeah, man.
Hey, this is me, the Tennis Shoe.
And you, like I know.
Well, tell the man.
I would, but I keep forgetting.
Hey, Bronson, look, this is for real. They're trying to pin a murder on me.
Crazy, man. You're way out there. Way out. Murder. What kicks?
Like, man, won't somebody dig me?
Now, do you want to tell me why you killed him?
Yeah, but I didn't.
You were carrying a hatchet that killed five people. How did it get in your bag?
The cat must have put it there.
Who's that?
I told you already. You know, the guy that was at Pop's place.
Who else saw him beside you?
I told you, the two squares. What, give me the lift.
The man and woman you sent in the wrong direction?
I didn't send him in the wrong direction. The cat did. He's cool. He did it for a kick.
You killed the old man for a kick?
No, I'm innocent. It's all a collection of circumstances. I'm just a victim of the world, man.
Take him down and book him for first-degree murder. What's going on out there?
Most everybody in town's out front. They're yelling for the hatchet killer.
You aren't going to let him in here, Chief, huh?
Yeah, if they make up their mind they're coming in, it's going to take more than me to stop them.
Well, you can't let them get me. Don't pay any attention to them, Daddy-O.
I'm going to go out there and try and talk them out of it.
Yeah.
Quiet. We're all friends and neighbors. Now, I know how you all felt about Pop Daniels. He was a friend of mine, too. But I know you all well enough to know that you all want to see justice done.
That's what we brought the rope for.
We want the killer.
We want the killer.
Now, quiet down a minute. Quiet down.
It's like a nightmare. A million hands pull and drag me out of the jail across the street and into this sleepy little park in the center of town. I try to laugh, man. I mean, it's a new kick being carried around like that. I try to laugh. Yeah, but no laugh comes out. And then I see this rope, the one with the long knot in it. And all of a sudden, I know that the only cat that's going to be swinging at this party is me.
That man at Pop's place to give us the wrong turn.
Oh, I should have paid more attention to my sense of direction.
all that driving, and here we are right back in Kingman. Oh, no, there was nobody in the street when we came through, and... Well, now look at that crowd over there in the park.
Probably a political rally of some sort.
No. Look at that rope. They're going to hang somebody.
Hey, old-timer.
Yes, sir?
What's going on?
They caught that fella what's been going around chopping up people over in Nevada. But he sure made a mistake when he killed old Pop Daniels here in Kingman this afternoon. We don't put up with that kind of
thing.
Look
at that man they're putting the rope on. Isn't that the
same? That's our hitchhiker. They're making a terrible mistake. He was with us all afternoon.
Walter, where are you going?
They'll hang him if I don't stop him.
Come back here, they'll hang you too.
Hey, man, give me a break.
Wait.
I didn't do it.
Wait.
Innocent.
This man is innocent.
It's a mistake. I'm in hell here. Somebody.
Let me through.
Somebody save me.
He's innocent. I can prove it.
I want to die.
Hold me. Give me a chance and listen to me. If you hang him, you'll hang an innocent man. I can prove he's innocent. Because he was with my wife and me all afternoon.
Man, am I glad to see you. After that, it really wasn't any trouble. They told the cops where I'd been. The cops were mad because I wasn't a killer. But there wasn't anything they could do about it. And the next morning, I walk out of jail into the sunshine and the fresh air. Like, man, it's really great to be alive. And the world looks good. Even people look good. I walk down the main drag, and in less than 5 blocks, I pass a little kid that tries to con me into buying up all his newspapers so he can go home early. A neon sign that screams good food and dance. 100 cars driven by guys that don't own them. And no apology for some guy I bumped into. And then I start wondering, what am I so con about?
You know, they say that those who don't learn from history are doomed to repeat it. I can believe that. In my own history of failing without any understanding, I realized that when I didn't understand, I didn't understand why I failed the first time. And so there I was, just like so many folks, spending 40 years trying to travel 7 miles. Well, you know, in time, I eventually learned it's better to learn from other people's mistakes than to keep making my own mistakes and pretending that I'm doing something great. No, skin your knee enough times, you really would rather not do it. And so, next segment here, we're going to go ahead and hit you with a little quick blast of some history. See, for those of you who aren't from America, because, you know, there's an international audience out there just waiting to find out what we do around here. The date, December 7th, 1941, will live in infamy because that was the day that Imperial Japan attacked the United States, Pearl Harbor. And what we have for you is a broadcast in which the very first news hitting the radio airwaves announced what happened. They didn't have TV like they do now. So it was radio. And you're going to hear a broadcast of a football game that's interrupted to bring the news of Pearl Harbor. You know Amelia Earhart? Yeah. Bermuda Triangle and all that? Yeah. Howard Hughes, and the Aviator? Yeah. All of that, yeah. When's the last time you heard Amelia Earhart speak? Well, that's been too long. So we're going to give you a minute of Amelia Earhart herself, actual footage, her actual voice, talking about women and air travel. And then we're also going to go ahead and talk about when Japan surrenders, because we want to finish that bookend on that. And we're finally going to finish you off with The Eagle Has Landed, because these are all historical things that affect America, the world, the human race, and development. And sometimes you need to be reminded that nothing just happens. Everything got this way because of effort. What about you? What kind of efforts are you making to grow your empire? That's fine. I'm not knocking you. I'm not telling you that what you're doing isn't the greatest thing in the world to do. All I'm asking is, if you diversify, how can you go wrong? Well, fair enough. But if you're not ready to make money, then stop pretending. See, one of my biggest problems I've found since I got to the Midwest, that folks here are real lonely. And they talk about money, but they don't want to make money. they want to make friends. More often than not, they want to make frenemies. It's like LL Cool J said about Teddy Cannabis. You don't want to battle. You want to socialize. Now, folks, I don't want to socialize. I want us to strive in concert towards getting this money. And the number three way to fail is to fail to learn from my own experiences. So just like we take this brief walk back through history, consider your own history. How many times did you have a chance to invest in Walmart, Google, Amazon, and you just didn't? Here I am, folks. First hit for free. Let's just go ahead and take a tour of history.
It's a long one, down to around the 3-yard line. Ward Cuff takes it, cutting up to his left, he's over the 10. Nice block there by Lehman. Cuff's still going, he's up to the 25, and now he's hit and hit hard about the 27-yard line. Bruiser Kennard made the tackle.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this important bulletin from the United Press. Flash, Washington. The White House announces Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. Stay tuned to WOR for further developments, which will be broadcast immediately as received.
In the brief span of 30-odd years, the world has seen an inventor's dream, first materialized by the Wright brothers at Kitty Hawk, become an everyday actuality. Perhaps I'm prejudiced, but to me it seems that no other phase of modern progress contrives to maintain such a grim measure of romance and beauty coupled with utility as does aviation. I myself still fly a Wasp motor, which has carried me over the North Atlantic, part of the Pacific, to and from Mexico City, and many times across this continent. Aviation, this young modern giant, exemplifies the possible relationship of women and the creations of science. Although women as yet have not taken full advantage of its use and benefits, air travel is as available to them as to men.
A few hours ago, Japan signed unconditional surrender to the Allies, just 6 years from the September weekend in which German aggression started the Second World War. Now, as General MacArthur said after the surrender ceremony, the entire world lies quietly at peace.
Okay, engine stop. Houston, Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
Roger, Tranquility. We copy you on the ground. You got a bunch of guys about to turn blue. We're breathing again. Thanks a lot.
All right. Well, now is our big one here. Yeah, this one here, I got a big visual when I first saw it or first heard it. And I was like, wow, you know what? This would make a great animated film. Or, you know, 30-minute segment. It was great, great, great. Because this is escapism at its best. This is from Escape. In fact, the sister show of Suspense, which, you know, we played an episode earlier. Escape was much more in the action-packed adventure concept, whereas Suspense was much more in the tension and murder mystery sort of vein of things. And this is a case of something that when I first heard it, I said, listen to this sucker. Listen to this slap nut hide away from life, but he wants it all. And golly gee willikers, I looked at my life, I said, how many times do we all do the same thing? Hey, I can't make it like this or that. I'm going to play video games. I'm going to try to win scratch-off online tickets. I'm going to try to win scratch-off real. Hey, I'm going to try to see if I can date some money. I'm going to see if I can go ahead and hang out with some celebrities. Whatever it is that is over there, we start to value more than ourselves, and we devalue ourselves all the way down to being an and one. I'm opposed to you devaluing yourself. You know why? Because the less valuable you believe you or anything that you offer is, the less you're willing to spend to promote it. Let's be real about it. If you got a Rolls Royce, however you define promote, you're going to promote your Rolls Royce more than you're going to promote your Honda Civic. Well, if your business, your goods, your services, your name brand is a Rolls Royce in your mindset, well, then golly gee willikers, what's 20 hot dollars to somebody like you? Come on now. Money don't make you, you make money. Have I ever told you about money? Let me explain something to y'all real quick about money. See, here's the reality here in these here United States and everywhere else in the world. Now, if you're catching this when I'm rich and famous down the road, you're going to be surprised that, folks, that's how I got there. I studied the game and now I'm here to teach it to everybody. See, every single month, there are truckloads and truckloads and truckloads of specially cloth woven paper. All right. That's in big old sheets, and they truck it in every single month over down to a certain building down there in Washington, D.C., Treasury Department, right? And every single month, they bring in this paper, truckload after truckload. And then the last week of the year, after they've brought in megatons of this same raggedy cloth-made paper, they go ahead and show the folks the Treasury Department a bill for all that cloth-based paper they made. The Treasury Department looks at the bill for all this paper they brought them, and they say, okay. And even though they brought them 400 million metric tons of this ragweed paper, all these people do, guess what? They just take a couple of sheets of it, put some ink on it, cut it up, put it in a briefcase, and they hand it to the folks who brought them all that paper in the first place. Do you know what that tells me, folks? That is some mighty powerful ink. See, the number one economic problem of this country is there's just not enough American sweat in America's money. That's why you, yes, you, Buttercup, you with the face, you that's doing all that breathing right about now, that's why you need to go ahead and create your own ink. Yeah, your own INC. Just like I am in, hey, we all got to figure out a way to get some protection from the government, from protection from the haters. Hey, I can't never forget about that woman who was a professional writer, and she wrote in a certain kind of vein, and she had a friend who wrote in another kind of vein. And because her friend was such a hater of her success, she started realizing that not just with this person, but lots of people, she probably might be better served by go ahead and publishing articles under a pseudonym, a pen name, nom de plume. And she started really getting really successful under her her pen name. And she shared with, you know, her family, and she shared with her husband. But her friend and her colleagues, she didn't. Because she came to realize her success represented their failure. Seeing her go up made them all realize they weren't going up. Comparative analysis and situational ethics. I'm no Joseph Fletcher fan, but I'll play one for $20 an interview. If you don't love you enough to pay to promote you, then understand that that's the reason why the people who are willing to slap names like Calvin Klein and Tommy Hilfiger and Donna Karan and FUBU on the same cloth that they have Fruit of the Loom and Hanes. In some cases, right? In some cases, it's the very same cotton, this very same factory, the very same worker. I'm not saying they don't go ahead and give it an extra stitch here or extra shiny button patch there. I'm not saying that. But what I'm saying is, golly gee willikers, how is it that Calvin Klein, Ralph Lauren, you name them, they claim them. Why is it when they put their ink on some cotton, it's worth hundreds of dollars. But when you do the same thing, it's not. Because they promoted their name on cotton, on leather, on wood, on plastic, online, in newspapers, and everywhere else, so that being associated with that brand makes you instantly cooler in the eyes of the people that you want to be cool in front of. And who do we not want to be cool in front of? Except the bankers. Everybody wants the bankers to think we're cool. Well, I'm not a banker. So I'm trying to print my own money, one word at a time. Because unlike the star of our next show, the escape episode known as Evening Primrose, I'm not a poet, I'm a battle rapper. And unlike him, I just couldn't charge it to that kind of game. Talk to you later.
Tonight we escape to the dark labyrinth of a giant department store in the dead of night, and to a fantastic world of night dwellers, as John Collier imagines it in his eerie story, Evening Primrose.
Sadie? Sadie, hey, what's the matter? It's me.
Oh, Sam, you nearly scared me to death. What do you mean coming in so quiet?
Hey, I didn't mean to scare you. I thought you'd be asleep. I didn't want to wake you.
Oh, Sam, I'm glad you're home.
Hey, what's the matter?
Oh, it's terrible. You got to do something, Sam.
What's terrible?
It's this. Just look at this.
What's terrible about that? Looks like an ordinary pad of paper to me.
Yeah, that's just it. That's just what I thought. But it's got writing in it. It's awful.
Now, wait a minute. Maybe you better tell me what this is all about.
Well, today I went shopping down at Bracey's department store. Yeah. I needed some writing paper, so I picked this up. It was on top of the pile, and bought it and brought it home. But tonight when I opened it, I found it's got writing in it.
Well, that's nothing so terrible. Just take it back tomorrow and make him give you a new one.
Oh, no, you don't understand. It's what's written in it that's so terrible.
What do you mean, what's written in it?
Here, you gotta read it.
Oh, Sadie.
No, no, right now. Read it.
Look, Sadie, I'm tired. I've been bowling all
day. Please, Sam, please. Just read it.
All right, for Pete's sake. October 13th. Today I made my decision. I decided to say goodbye to the world, to get out. Leave, break away. And I have done it. Ah, Sadie, there's a lot of...
Go on, read.
And now I am free. Really free.
Yes, I am free at last. The world is an intolerable place for a poet. I was broke, starving, at my wit's end. And then I had a brilliant idea. I would escape to a place where I had no need to earn a living, where I could write to my heart's content in peace and security. Where is this place? Right under your nose. So close you'd never think of it. I am now living in Bracey's department store. I have everything within arm's reach that anyone would need or desire. And it's all free. Absolutely free. I arrived this afternoon. I'd spent 3 days looking over all of the department stores in town. I decided on Bracey's because of the completeness of their food department. Therefore, this afternoon, I entered the store and went immediately to the fourth floor, to the rug department, and hid myself in this dusty, out-of-the-way corner behind a pile of carpets. Once I'm settled, I'll furnish it with the best of modern pieces from the furniture department. It's small, but I'll be cozy enough. And safe. After the store closed, I made my first venture out. I tiptoed as far as the stationery counter and got this paper. the writer's primary need. Now, after making my initial entry, I'll go out and get food, wine, the pillows for my bed, perhaps a fancy dressing gown. This is perfect. I'll be able to write here. Dawn, October 14th. I'm almost too unnerved to write this. The whole thing is unbelievable. After the store was dark and completely quiet, I crept out and started for the food department. One's footsteps echo hollowly in an empty department store at night, and I found myself gliding along the floor on tiptoe, moving as silently as possible. But the sound of footsteps persisted. Suddenly I realized they were not my own. The night watchman. I was in the Salon Moderne. Quickly I seized a mink coat from a hanger, draped it about my shoulders, and stood stock still. I could have reached out and touched him, but he passed by without so much as a glance. He started to smile, but the smile froze on my lips. There was someone else here. I was looking straight into a pair of eyes. Large, flat, luminous, inhuman eyes peering at me from among the Mrs. Tailored suits a dozen feet away. They belonged to a creature dressed as a man, but he was as pale as a creature found under a stone. His hands hanging motionless at his sides looked more like the fins on a fish than human hands. And then he spoke.
Not bad for a beginner.
I'm sorry, I didn't know anybody else lived here.
Oh, yes. We live here. It's delightful.
We?
Yes, all of us. Don't you see? Look around you.
I looked around. I saw nothing. I looked again. I saw an old man come clambering out from behind a clock. There were three elderly ingenues, incredibly emaciated, pale as lace, almost transparent, simpering before the perfume counter. A chintzy lady swam out from the curtains and drapes. They came swarming thick around me, pale, thin, wispy, moving silently, fluttering like gauze in the wind, whispering.
He looks.
Who is he?
As coarse as the sun.
What is he doing here?
A detective. Send for the dark man.
Yes, send for the dark man.
The dark man.
They were pressing around me, clawing, holding me, their pale faces contorted with venomous, inhuman hatred. I was paralyzed. All I could do was repeat over and over again, I'm not a detective. I'm not a detective. I'm not.
A burglar, then.
A burglar? Tie him up.
Hold him. Carry him to the police.
Send for the dark men.
Stop. Stop. Let him speak.
I'm not a detective or a burglar. I'm a poet.
Then what are you doing here?
I've renounced the world. I came here to live where I could be alone. Away from the world.
Why then, he's come over to us. He's just like us.
He's come over to us, a poet.
He must meet Mrs. Vanderpant.
Yes, Mrs. Vanderpant. She's coming now.
I followed their eyes toward the balcony. There, coming down the wall like an ancient spider, clambered an old lady. Wrinkled and cracked and emaciated, she must have been at least 80, a shadowy matriarch. And the things around me bowed and scraped as she reached the floor and floated toward us.
What's going on here? Where is that stupid girl? What's keeping her?
Oh, Mrs. Vanderpant.
Well, what is it? Who's this, Mr. Roscoe?
Mrs. Vanderpant, may I present Mr.
Snell, Mr. Snell, Mr. Charles Snell.
Yes, yes, of course. Mr. Snell, he is a poet, and he's come here to live.
Oh, he has he?
That's what he says, and I believe him.
Well?
He avoided the night watchman quite neatly, for a beginner.
Well, thank you.
Very well, we shall see. A poet should find inspiration here.
Mr. Snell, Mrs. Vanderpant is our grand old lady.
Oh?
I am quite the oldest inhabitant here, Mr. Snell. 3 mergers and a complete rebuilding. But they didn't get rid of me.
Oh, really?
Oh,
how nice.
Where is Ella? Where is my broth?
She's bringing it, Mr. Vanderbilt.
Oh, terrible little creature. She is our foundling, Mr. Snell. She's not quite our sort.
Is that so?
I have been here, Mr. Snell, ever since the terrible times of the 80s. I was a young girl then. A beauty, they say. And poor Papa lost his money. Braces meant a lot to a young girl in those days. So when I wasn't able to have a charge account, I came here for good. That's better than a charge account. I was quite alarmed when others began to come after the crash of 1907. But it was the dear judge.
How do you do?
Yes.
The colonel.
How do you do?
Yes.
Mrs. Bilby.
How do you do?
Mrs. Bilby writes plays.
Oh.
And comes of an old Philadelphia family. Oh, you will find us quite nice here, Mr. Snell.
I'm sure I will.
And, of course, all our dear young people came in 1929. Their poor papas jumped from skyscrapers. They couldn't bear to be without charge accounts either.
Do you mean all these people live here?
Oh, and many more. You shall meet them all later.
Oh, here comes Ella with my broth.
Come, come, you stupid thing.
Mrs. Vanderpant is waiting.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. I'm coming as fast as I can.
Now, here. Be careful. Don't spill it.
Oh, but she's young.
Well, of course, she is a little younger than most of them.
And she's different. She's beautiful.
Mr. Snell, Ella is Mrs. Vanderpant's maid.
That's right, old man. She's really not our sort at all.
You shouldn't say such things. She can hear you.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
You'll understand these things better after you've been here a while.
But it seems to me that
Mr.
you would...
Mr. Snell, we have certain rules here. They are necessary for our survival. I'm sure you won't find it hard to observe them.
Well, yes, I appreciate...
I should advise that you try. If you do not, that would be most unfortunate, Mr. Snell. Most unfortunate for you.
October 15th. You can imagine my feelings last night. My first thought was to escape as quickly as possible. In fact, I planned to wait till morning when the store opened, then quit my hiding place, mingle with the crowds, and leave Bracey's forever. But just at dawn, Mr. Roscoe brought me a cup of coffee, which must have been drugged, for I fell asleep. And when I awoke, I found I had slept all day, and night was closing over the store once more. Later, I've spent my second night here. I saw Ella again. Ella, the pearl of this remote, fantastic cave. She's not like the others. A trifle pale, but otherwise normal and human and beautiful. A child of perhaps 18. She's the only thing that makes this nightmare bearable. October 20th. Escape seems almost impossible. There's a very effective burglar alarm system and the doors are all carefully guarded. But that's nothing compared to the dark men. Who are the dark men? I don't know. But they threaten any transgressor with these dark men. I shall try to discover who they are. At least I am sure I'm watched, though they've begun to trust me now. Speaking to the night watchman would be suicide. Even if he believed my fantastic story or didn't shoot me as a burglar, I'm convinced that neither Ella nor I could get out of here alive. She and the night watchman are the only real people here. And how the others hate the night watchman.
Odious, vulgar creature. He reeks of the coarse sun.
Oh, come now, Mrs. Bilby. He's really a personable young man. Very young for a night watchman.
Mr. Snell, sometimes I wonder about your taste.
You mustn't stay so much to yourself, Mr. Snell. You must become better acquainted with our ways.
Yes, old man. You must come to the play tonight. We're going to be entertained with one of Mrs. Bilby's tragic comedies. Love in Shadowland. I'm sure you'll enjoy.
I'm sure I will.
It's really a festive occasion, you know. Wanamaker's is coming over.
Wanamaker's?
Yes. The entire colony over at Wanamaker's is coming here en masse to attend the play.
You mean there are people living in other stores?
Oh, dear, yes. Didn't you know? Of course, the best people live in Braces and Wanamaker's.
Oh, come now, Mrs. Bilby. There's some very nice people at Alton's.
I beg your pardon, Mrs. Bilby.
Oh, hello, Ella.
Good evening, Mr. Snell. Mrs. Bilby...
Well, what is it?
Please, ma'am, I'd so love to see your play tonight. May I have your permission?
Certainly not. You know better than that, you stupid creature. You know where you belong. In the basement, for the garbage cans.
But Mrs. Bilby couldn't...
Mr. Snell.
Ella, you're becoming entirely too forward of late. I'd advise you to watch your step. Remember the dark men.
Oh, no, please, Mr. Roscoe. I'll be good. I promise I will. No, please don't send for the dark men. I'm sorry, Mrs. Bilby. Excuse me.
Ella, come back.
Mr. Snell, you forget yourself. Let her go.
But how can you treat her like that? Why do you always frighten her? And what is all this about the dark men?
Well, the dark men...
Oh, please, Mr. Roscoe, not now. You'll spoil our whole evening. And I do so want Mr. Snell to enjoy my play.
Very well. Later, Mr. Snell.
But I want to know about the dark men.
Later, later.
October 21st. At last, I found an opportunity to speak to Ella alone. I hadn't dared to speak to her before. Here one has a sense always of pale eyes secretly watching. But last night at the play, I induced a fit of hiccups. As I anticipated, I was sternly reprimanded and told to go and secrete myself in the basement where the night watchman wouldn't hear me. This was exactly what I had planned. I went to the basement. There in the darkness, among the garbage cans and the rats, I heard sobbing. Ella! Ella!
Oh!
Ella, is that you?
Yes.
Why are you crying? What is it, Ella?
They wouldn't even let me see the play.
Is that all?
Oh, Mr. Snell, I'm so unhappy.
There, there. You mustn't cry.
You're the only one who's kind.
Ella, why are you here? Why do they treat you so differently?
Because I'm not like them. I didn't choose to come here.
You mean you're held prisoner?
Yes. You see, I was only 6. I came here on a shopping tour with my mother. I got lost and fell asleep behind a counter. It was dark when I awoke and they found me. Some of them wanted to send for the dark men because they were afraid I would tell on them. But Mrs. Vanderpant said no, I could stay and be her maid. I've been here ever since.
Since you were 6? Haven't you ever tried to get away?
No. I don't know anything about out there. I wouldn't know what to do. Besides, I'm afraid. If anyone tries to get out, they send for the dark men.
Ella, who are the dark men?
Don't you know? Oh, it's horrible.
Tell me.
You know how people live in all the stores, at Gimble's and Bloomingdale's.
Yes, yes, I know.
Well, the dark men live at the Undertaker's.
Good heavens.
And whenever someone dies or breaks the rules, or when a burglar gets in and sees these people and might tell... They send for the dark men.
Oh, horrible.
They put the body in the butcher shop in the food department. And then the dark men come. I saw them once. It was terrible.
What do they do?
They go in where the dead person is. They have wax with them and all sorts of things. And when they're gone, there's just a wax model left on the counter. Then people put a frock on it or a bathing suit and mix it up with the other wax models in the windows. And nobody ever knows.
Ella, you mean all these dummies around us?
Oh, not all of them. But if you displease these people, the same thing will happen to you.
October 30th. I haven't kept up my journal. Writing has been out of the question. Once more, I'm frozen with terror. But not for myself now. For Ella. They hate her. Any time they might turn against her and send for the dark men. My mind is filled with her. I dream of her every day. I'd live to see her at night. We've managed it several times. They trust me now and let me roam about without interference. Finally, tonight, I met her again and said it. Ella, I love you.
Oh, Charles.
I love you, Ella.
let's get married. Or whatever they do here. Then we can live together in my home in the carpet department. They wouldn't dare hurt you then.
Oh, Charles,
don't look so dismayed. If you like, we'll go away from here. Maybe we can get transferred to Bergdorf Goodman's, overlooking Central Park.
Don't, Charles, don't. You mustn't.
But I love you. Ella, you're not in love with someone else.
Yes, Charles, I am.
But who? I thought you hated them all. It must be Roscoe. He's the only one that's young enough.
Oh, no, Charles, not Roscoe. Especially not him. I do hate them all. They make me shudder.
Well, who is it then?
It's him.
Who?
The night watchman.
No, impossible.
I love him. He smells of the sun.
Ella.
Oh, it was wonderful the way it happened. Don't tell on me, Charles, or they'll punish me.
Oh, no, no.
I was careless, and there he was, coming around the corner in the ladies' lingerie department. I was caught. There were only some wax models in their underthings. There was nothing else to do. I slipped off my dress and stood still.
Oh, I see.
He stopped and looked at me. And Charles, he spoke to me. He said, "Say, honey, I wish they made him like you on 8th Avenue. Charles, wasn't that a lovely thing to say?"
Personally, I should have said Park Avenue.
It doesn't matter what street. It was a lovely thing to say.
But what can you do about him? Ella, he belongs to another world.
Yes, to 8th Avenue. I want to go there. Charles, are you really my friend?
Yes, of course I am.
Then I'll tell you. I'm going to stand there again in the lingerie department, so he'll see me.
And then?
Perhaps he'll speak to me again.
Ella, you're only torturing yourself.
No, because this time I shall answer him. He'll take me away.
Take you away? Oh, no, Ella, I couldn't bear that. You don't love him. You only think you do because you think he'll take you out of here, but you don't know that he will. And I will, Ella. I've made up my mind.
No, Charles, I couldn't let you do it. Even if I loved you, you couldn't do it, Charles.
Why not?
Because you really belong here. You've become one of them now.
Ella, you mustn't say that.
It's true. And, Charles, I've got to go. There's someone watching us. I feel it.
No, wait, Ella.
Goodbye, Charles.
No, Ella. Come back. Ella!
Please, old man. You'll arouse the night watchman.
Roscoe!
Yes. Oh, love can be very upsetting, can't it?
You heard?
Yes. Just the last moment or so. Very touching. Yet it's understandable. I've been attracted to Ella myself. So she loves another, hmm? Too bad, old boy. Who could it be? Could it be that I am the cause of your heartbreak?
You flatter yourself too much, Roscoe.
Well, then whom? The old judge? Well, certainly not. The colonel? Hardly.
None of those.
Oh, not one of the customers. The staff?
She loves the night watchman. Can you imagine that? She loves the...
Oh?
Roscoe, I shouldn't have said that. It's not true. At least I don't think it's true. You wouldn't... Roscoe... You said you loved her, too. You wouldn't do anything. Tell anybody. This is a secret between us. Between friends, isn't it?
Of course, old man. As secret as the grave.
She's young. Perhaps he'll leave and she'll forget him in time. Who knows? Perhaps she'll learn to love you or me.
Of course, in time.
And we'll figure a way to keep her safe here.
Absolutely safe. Now, don't you worry about it. It's almost dawn. Time for bed. Good morning, Mr. Snell.
Early evening, November 4th. I was a fool. I should have known he couldn't be trusted. He must have gone straight to Mrs. Vanderpant because this evening the atmosphere has changed. People flicker to and fro. Smiling nervously, horribly, with a sort of frightened, sadistic exaltation. An informal dance in the record department has been called off. I can't find Ella. I'm going out again now to look for her. Roscoe, what have you done with her?
Shh, quiet, old boy, the night watchman.
I don't care. What have you done?
Whatever I did was for your own good as well as for the good of us all.
Wait a minute. What is that? What are those people carrying? That's Ella. She's tied up. They're carrying... Ella! Ella!
Stop it, Charles. Stop it.
Leave me, Charles.
Let me go.
Oh, stop, Charles. Stop it. You'll arouse the night watchman.
No,
They're taking her into the butcher shop. Roscoe.
Yes. Those are the dark men.
Good Lord.
Midnight. I'm scribbling this last entry hurriedly. They are in there in the butcher shop with Ella. The dark men. There's only one thing to do. I'm going to find the night watchman and tell him. He and I will save her if we can. And if we are overpowered, well, I will leave this pad on the stationery counter. Tomorrow, if I live, I will recover it. If I do not, whoever finds this and reads it, look in the store windows. Look for three new wax dummies. Two men, one rather sensitive looking, and a girl. She has blonde hair and blue eyes, and her nose turns up a little. Look for us. And then find them. Smoke them out. Exterminate them.
Avenge us.
Oh, Sam, isn't it horrible?
Ah.
We got to do something. Tell somebody something. Oh, Sam, what'll we do?
Do? Well, nothing. Go to bed.
But Sam...
Well, whoever wrote this has sure got a weird sense of humor. It's probably some clerk down at Bracey's who ought to be fired.
You mean you think it's just a story?
Are you kidding? You don't believe this stuff, do you?
Well, I don't know.
Forget it, baby. Come on, snap out of it. I shouldn't leave you alone. You get too many ideas when I go out bowling at night.
But don't you think maybe we ought to just take it back and show somebody?
Oh, nuts. It's not worth the bother. They'd laugh at you, baby. They'd think you were crazy or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you're right. I guess I was silly.
Forget it. Oh, come on, let's go to bed. I'm tired.
Okay. Okay, Sam. Gee, you know, there for a while I sure was scared. Oh, I even forgot what I was going to tell you. Sam, I found the cutest dress today. Only $19.95.
Yeah, baby?
Yeah. It was in the window at Bracey's. It was on a beautiful little wax model with blonde hair, blue eyes, and a turned-up nose. And there were two men standing beside... Sam!
Escape is produced and directed by William N. Robeson, and tonight brought to you Evening Primrose by John Collier, adapted for radio by John Dunkel, with Elliot Lewis as Charles Snell, Paul Frees as Roscoe, and Pat Lowry as Ella.
All right, folks. Well, that was that. The creepiness of getting what you're after and finding out that it's not what you're looking for. You know, we've all got escapist fantasies. God knows I've definitely run for more battles than I should have and didn't necessarily win the ones I won as honorably as I wanted. But it's always amazing when people don't want to accept that they're not the only one who's got the same idea. And to think of generation after generation of people hiding in a department store until they become ghouls. You know, the thing that most gets me about that whole episode is when the young lady who was, you know, the foundling, when she said to him, no, you're one of them. Because he had to abandon his life as a poet and did it. I'm escaping the world. No, you wanted a free lunch, boy. And that's why you went to a department store to live. I mean, just the sheer outrageousness. When I first heard this, I mean, look, folks, I done slipped and slid. Trust me. I done done some double dipping and some hard tripping. But that's, what? You move into a department store and he's not the only one? But now they moved into, and so is the whole thing about he abandoned his place in society and created a place inside of the department store. And then to hear when he's talking about trying to give her an option out, we can, you know, we can relocate from Macy's to Gimbel's. I was like, oh, wait. I mean, oh, buddy, yo, somebody going to take care of the poet. Poet ain't going to take care of himself. You know what I'm saying? He got a stimulus package already waiting every day. He going to eat. He going to drink. He going to, they going to do, oh, wait. And there's a whole culture of people living in all these department stores. Makes me wonder who were the dark men who, before, you know, they went to the mortuary to live. If this guy and all these other folks couldn't live without charge cards, then what exactly did these people go through that they couldn't go without, that they had to live in the mortuary? Hold up. How are you hiding in a mortuary? Do they have that many departments? I'm just saying, Evening Primrose, I'm just saying. There is no such thing as a free lunch. And if there is, you're probably on the menu. This is the Brain Pimp, reminding you that for $20, you could get on here and be part of new take on old-time radio history. 20 questions, good investment. We'll go ahead and promote your best as we can. And trust me, as I get to figuring this out more and more and I get to spread the message that I'm available for this sort of operation, I think you're going to like the residual impact of people discovering my podcast and then going back into the old one, the old archives, and suddenly you're going to be like, yo, I'm from Saskatoon. I was checking this podcast that was recorded 6 months ago. Man, do you still sell that stuff? Yeah, and they sure, and you sure, and there it is. But that's all in time. But for now, this was the First Hit for Free Show. This is your host, The Brain Pimp, signing off.